Well, I think part of the sourcing process to me is the most exciting, because you know, you rent a car and you drive through the south of France, and you know, you obviously have some appointments set up, but you know, some of the most exciting things happen when you're just kind of winging it. And you meet a farmer at, you know, a wine fair, and he's, you know, he says, well, come back to my estate, and you're not quite sure where you're going, and you follow a guy in a Peugeot, you know, up a rambling hill, and all of a sudden you come across either a castle or like a shack in the woods, and the guy's making wine out of the back of his, you know, house, or he could be making wine out of a major estate. You know, looks are deceiving, but you want to assume that someone with a very established chateau is making good wine. But 9 times out of 10, the guy out of the garage who's like super passionate is making these better wines, and they're maybe more rustic and less polished. So to me, like the restaurateur, the sommelier, this story resonates with them about the small farmer, you know, the guy who's making wine on small quantities, 80 cases, 100 cases. Those are the things exciting to Barterhouse, and hopefully the things exciting to our clients.
Welcome to the Chef Smarty Pants Radio Show, formerly known as Why We Cook, on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, your host, and this is episode 61 of the show, formerly known as Why We Cook, now known as the Chef Smarty Pants Radio Show. So it's Tuesday, but every Monday, most Monday nights, I take a swim class. It's like a swim technique class. It's mostly for people who are training for triathlons. And then for people like me who just want to be better lap swimmers. I am not a triathlete by any means, but I want to be a better lap swimmer, so I take this class. It's kind of hard for me to keep up, though, because they're all pretty serious swimmers. And if you've ever seen me, you know that I am quite small, and my limbs are very short. I am under 5 feet tall, so I tend to be slower than everybody else, but I still try hard, and I'm making progress. I'm doing pretty well. So anyway, last night, there I am in the pool, Monday night, trying to keep my mind off of the gasping sounds that are coming out of me as I am trying to breathe and keep up. And as I'm struggling there, I try to think of other things. I try not to think of my imminent drowning and death. And I try to think of other things that might take my mind off of imminent drowning and death. You know, you sort of put your mind elsewhere and it helps. So usually, because it's Monday, I try to think about what I'll talk about tonight, Tuesday, when I do the show. And also try to come up with sort of a theme for the show that weaves back into other things that happened to me either that weekend or the previous week at work, or cooking at home, or just out in the world, or whatever. You know, try to kind of weave it all together and stitch a cohesive show. So there I am in the pool, and I'm swimming. You could call it swimming. And the water in this pool is kind of, it's a little bit cloudy. It's a little bit murky. We're not really sure what's going on in that pool, whether it's overchlorinated, underchlorinated, but it's definitely a little, it's a little gross. It looks a little like fish stock, really. Less like water. More like a fish fumet. So I'm in the big, huge pool of fish fumet and all these thrashing swimmers around me. And I thought, you know, cooking, fundamentally, cooking really is just about forcing the water out of things, driving the water out. The same way at that moment I was trying to force the water out of my lungs as I was simultaneously kind of choking on it, because I was thinking about cooking and not thinking about my swimming, and so I started to choke. And I had just been talking to a student about it that day, yesterday afternoon, because that's like a common theme in my teaching. Like, what is cooking really all about? What are we actually trying to do? I mean, we're trying to create deliciousness, really, but the process of that is to get the water out of food. Sometimes it's to put the water into food, but really, everything's got water on it, in it. You take the water out, things better. So in class, we were clarifying butter. And that's what all that is. When you clarify butter, you cook the water out of it. And when the water cooks out, it gets hot enough that the milk solids can coagulate. And then you have clear butter fat. Clarifying butter, removing water. Roasting a chicken, same idea. You're cooking out the water so that it can get hot enough so the proteins can coagulate and the sugars can caramelize. It's the same idea. The fat melts. Baking, first you're adding water. You're hydrating flour. You're adding fat. And then you bake it to push the water back out. It's all about getting out of the water. So you cook out enough water from something and you can raise the surface temperature of it or the internal temperature of it high enough that then you can do other things to it, like caramelize proteins, gelatinize starches, melt fats, swim more than 10 laps without dying. So all this was running through my head while I was swimming. And I was thinking, well, how do I turn that into a show? I mean, that would just be it. I just talked about it. Okay, done. It's about cooking out the water. But if you listened to my show last week, and I'm sure you listen religiously, you may remember that I was talking about this mushroom I found, this giant hen of the woods mushroom specimen that I found while I was hiking. And I talked about it on last week's show. Well, I took it home and I cut it up and I roasted it in a pretty hot oven for 25 or so, coated with olive oil and salt. And I roasted it and it was really, really tasty, really delicious. And I'm still working my way through it. There's actually some left. It was so big. But mushrooms are like more than 90% water. They're almost all water, which is why they have also almost no calories, but they actually have quite a bit of protein, which is interesting. And they're really only worth eating once you remove all that water, because otherwise they don't have that much flavor when they're raw. And hot, dry heat is the best way to do that to a mushroom. A blast of hot, dry heat, sort of like a sauna after a swim. You drive out all that water. Or after you take a schwitz, which would be sitting in a steam room if you were my grandfather and that's how you said it. So you also may remember that not only did I find this hen of the woods mushroom that I was very excited about, but I also found this giant puffball mushroom. I talked about it last week. We found this puffball mushroom, but it was too old and bug-eaten. It was a little slimy, so we had to let that one go. And so after we left that one go, I went home and I did a little bit of reading about the puffballs. And all the books said that, you know, if you have the real deal, the real puffball, that they're pretty good eating. And so, of course, I was kind of sad because I don't like missing out on an opportunity to eat something that might be good. But the hen made up for it. That hen of the woods was so good, it made up for it. It was really meaty and very mushroomy, earthy. It was good. Good fungal fodder. Really flavorful. Really good texture, too. Texture, I think, is a key thing in the appreciation and eating of mushrooms. They have to have a little bit of solidity to them. I think a lot of people think they don't like mushrooms or don't like mushrooms because of the texture and because they've only ever eaten soggy, poorly cooked mushrooms that haven't been cooked enough to do what, class? Yes, to force the water out of them. If you don't force the water out, they're soggy. And I think that's what turns people off at a young age. But the hen of the woods mushroom was roasted and it was like meat. It sort of had this pliant, chewy texture reminiscent of meat. Of what kind of meat? I don't know. Sort of like flank steak? So I don't know. But anyway, since we couldn't try that puffball, I couldn't make a comparison of the two of them at that moment. But then something happened. We have to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll talk about what happened. In my brain, ice cold water running through my veins. Got a bad taste in my mouth from bitter tears. Heart beating sad because the love gone bad. I see a rainbow on the black. Must be a sign you ain't coming back. Wake up and You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to the Chef Smarty Pants radio show, formerly known as Why We Cook. But if you want to find the show on Facebook, it's still Why We Cook, because Facebook doesn't let you change the name of a business page. So that's unfortunate. But I am also tweeting now, so you can find me on Twitter at Chef Smarty Pants. Occasionally, I remember to tweet. Okay, so I left you hanging in the first segment about what happened. So then this past weekend, we took our usual hike, our usual Saturday hike, but we took a different route this time. We took a trail that leads to a road, but not a road where cars can drive, just an old road, where we've had good luck in the past finding boletes. Now, the bolete family is the mushroom family that has the elusive and delicious porcini mushroom as a member. And on this particular road, in good mushroom years, we've found a whole lot of boletes in the past, but no actual porcini yet. We're still looking for the holy grail of the mushroom. But we have found some really interesting other boletes on this road, like the alboater, the Telopolis, I think it's a Telopolis alboater, which is a pure black mushroom that looks like it's covered in black velvet. And it's beautiful and scary looking, but edible. And it's kind of scary to eat something that's black. It sort of seems wrong. I mean, think about it. What else do we eat that's black? Black jelly beans, black licorice, but that's artificial coloring. Black beans, they're not really black. They're dark purple. We don't need anything black. You know, like George Carlin's routine about no blue food. There's no real black food either, except the alboater. But this year, like I've said, was one of the worst mushroom seasons in decades. And so no boletes, nothing, nothing. So dejected, we gave up, we walked home. And then we're walking along the main road with all the traffic and all the roadkill and nobody who slows down for you. And right there on the side of the main road was the biggest, whitest puffball mushroom I have ever seen. I thought at first it was a human skull sitting on the side of the road. It was the size of a pumpkin. It was massive. And even better than that first puffball that we had found that we had to abandon, this one had no bug damage to it at all and seemed very fresh. So we scooped that sucker right up off of the ground and I carried it home carefully cradled in my arms, sort of like a big mushroom baby. I could have tucked it under my shirt and looked like I was 8 months pregnant with a giant mushroom. And we took it home. We checked out a couple of the Myco websites and lo and behold, it was for sure a giant puffball mushroom, the real deal. And I put some pictures of it on the Why We Cook Facebook page, so you can check those out. It's pretty funny how big it is. So all the sites that I checked out recommended eating it, sort of treating it like eggplant or tofu, which made me a little suspicious. They said you should bread it and fry it or cube it up and stir fry it with other things. All of those are techniques to me that serve to masquerade something that has no flavor. So I was a little suspicious. All the books and sites say it has a mild flavor and a soft texture. So along with that night's dinner of grilled mackerel and ratatouille, I decided to grill up some of this puffball mushroom. Now, I was running low on olive oil, and I didn't want to go to the store, and I didn't want to saute or fry it. So I just sliced a few pieces off and brushed them with a little bit of oil, sprinkled them with salt, and I put them on the grill because I thought most mushrooms are good grilled. I'll throw it on the grill. And I was expecting it to be sort of like a grilled portabella, to have like a little bit of chew to it. But when I sliced it up, I thought it would slice more like a portabella too, be a little bit like pliant. But it had this really weird texture. You remember those marshmallow circus peanut candies? Remember they were orange and shaped like big peanuts? But they were like crumbly, foamy, dry marshmallows? I hated those. I never understood the purpose of that candy. Nobody likes those, right? Does anybody like those circus peanuts? Anyway, the texture of the mushroom was like that. It was sort of like dry foam inside, kind of crumbly. So I was suspicious. I grilled a few pieces. We tasted. It didn't suck, but it was pretty mild. The flavor was, it was kind of weak, kind of watery, but the texture, just like, there was definitely something tofu-like about it, but not firm tofu, which I like, more like soft tofu. It was watery. It was insipid. That's really the word for it. It was insipid, like poorly cooked eggplant. It was insipid. And it, you know, even where the water had cooked out completely, it hadn't really developed any flavor. So it was just weak, not bad flavor, just weak. And it was very disappointing, to say the least. I mean, it was like, you know, going out hunting for some prized game animal and you finally bag a gigantic one and then you take it home and it tastes, you know, like chicken breast. Like catering hall banquet chicken breast. So I ate a few bites. Adam ate a few bites. My friend Ida came over. You remember Ida from the Thrifty episode? Ida came over. She ate a few bites. And then I just threw the rest into the woods. I didn't even want to put it in my fridge or put it in my garbage can because when I cut into it, it was throwing off spores like crazy. Millions and millions of spores in my house. And the spores were making my eyes and my throat burn. The air in the kitchen was so full of spores. And the website said that if you got a specimen that size, it could contain over a trillion spores. And the smell was so strong on the spores. It was so mushroomy smelling. It was actually making me sick. So much for my great find of the weekend. It turned out to be kind of a bust. I had to throw it over the wall into the woods. But you do have to be really careful when you breathe in mushroom spores. Like if you go out and you pick a mushroom, don't stick it right up to your nose and inhale, because you can actually inhale the spores and then you can grow mushrooms in your lungs. Don't believe me? Go to Google and Google the words Bob Dylan mushroom lung and see what comes up. I am not making this up. So I had to get that thing out of the house fast. And I did. I tossed it. It went in the trash. It went out the back. So cooking the puffball mushroom got me thinking, though, as things do, you know, it sort of spins out. And as I said earlier, when I teach, you know, I try to emphasize what cooking is about. It's about getting rid of water. And pretty much everything breaks down along those lines. Like I said, proteins coagulate. But even when they coagulate, they're pushing water out of meat. And so with most foods, the more water you take out, the more flavor you create. And with mushrooms, of course, it's quite a dramatic effect because a raw mushroom has very little flavor. And you really shouldn't be eating them anyway, too. You shouldn't smell them and you shouldn't eat them raw because raw mushrooms can have all kinds of molds and bacteria living on them. And they can actually make you sick. So you should always cook your mushrooms. But when you cook mushrooms, you're driving out all the water and you're giving the flavors a chance to really develop. And I think one of the best ways to cook them is to roast them like I did with the hen. Slice them up, olive oil, salt, spread them on a sheet pan and roast them until they're really crispy and brown. Now that brings me to what happened in my class this week. We have to take a very short break. When we come back, we'll talk about what happened in my class. Welcome back to the Chef Smarty Pants radio show on the Heritage Radio Network. So where was I? Okay, so we were talking about the basic principle of cooking, which is that you force water out of food. That's what it comes down to. Mushrooms being a perfect example of that. So what happened? So this week or last week, maybe it was last week, I was teaching a class and we were doing these composed entrees. And one of my students was in charge of roasting all these mixed wild mushrooms to put on the plate. Well, somebody on the team forgot that they were in the oven and they overcooked. So they overcooked like $50 worth of mushrooms in the oven. So they got to be more like mushroom chips or like mushroom jerky, really. And, you know, trying to keep in character as the instructor, I severely chastised the jerky himself who overcooked the mushrooms and reprimanded the team for not looking out for each other's mise en place, not being aware. But, you know, they were sufficiently regretful and hung their little heads and all that. And it was a good lesson for them. But, you know, I wasn't too harsh. Nobody cried or anything. It was okay. And then secretly, when nobody was looking, I tasted the well-done mushroom jerky chips. And they were really good. I couldn't say that to the class. But they were crispy and meaty. I mean, they were definitely overdone. Almost burnt. But not quite. Another minute or two in the oven and they'd have been toast. But they weren't toast. They were like mushroom toast. Really good. Now, at that point, we couldn't really use them on the plate. I said they could use a few as a garnish. I would allow a few to be sprinkled on as a garnish. But we couldn't really use them because they didn't really do a good job on them. But secretly, what I wanted to do was pack them up in a little bag and take them home. And that's what I did. I packed them up and I hid them in my backpack. And then I ate them later in secret, like a little mouse eating those mushrooms. Teaching, I think, is a lot like parenting. Sometimes it's best not to be too honest with your kids or your students. You tell them what they need to know. So that's what happened in class with the mushrooms. And it all got me thinking about the water and the cooking out the water and everything. It's been like this theme with me for 2 weeks. And mushrooms are really, really porous. So they're like little sponges and they soak up liquids like crazy when you cook them with liquids. And that's why when you read cookbooks, people say, oh, never wash them. You never, ever, ever want to wash your mushrooms. They'll become soggy. Well, that's just ridiculous because you're going to cook them. So any water that's in them is going to cook out anyway, right? Now, you don't want to soak them for a long time to clean them. You just give them a quick rinse or a quick dip. That's all you have to do. And that's totally fine. Dry them off on a towel. And then you put them in the pan. You're going to cook them anyway. That way, you can get rid of any little creepy, crawly, buggy stuff that might be in there. Wash off some of the dirt. I mean, you can also just wipe them down with a paper towel. And that's a good way to clean them. But stuff that I find out in the woods, I give it a good rinse. And I usually dunk them in salt water. Because then if there are any bugs, the bugs die in salt water. So anyway, last night, I wanted to cook up these two pork porterhouse chops that I got here from Patrick from Heritage Foods. He gave me these two really nice fat pork porterhouse chops. And they were in my fridge and I knew I had to use them. So I had brought home this leftover Korean short rib braising sauce that had no short ribs left in it. It was just the sauce. And the sauce was great because it had been made with dried shiitake mushrooms. And I find that most mushrooms actually taste better dried because when there's no water left at all in them, all you have is flavor. Because remember, water doesn't taste like anything. So the less of it you have, the more flavor you're actually going to have. So this sauce had been made with dried shiitake mushrooms that had been simmered with soy sauce and sesame oil and stock and these ribs. And it had sort of done the opposite, where you take this totally dehydrated mushroom and then you soak it full of flavor and they act like little flavor sponges. So it's like you get rid of all the water, which has no flavor, desiccate them completely, and then let them suck up all this other flavorful liquid. And I highly recommend using those dried shiitake mushrooms because A, they're cheaper than fresh, and B, I think they actually taste a lot better. than the fresh. They're much more intense. The flavor is so much better in them. And like I said, they're cheaper per pound because you're not paying for the weight. You're not paying for water weight. So you're going to get more for your money. So these are all just things that I've been thinking about while I've been trying not to drown in my swim class. You know, thinking about myself immersed in this giant pool of water and thinking about how really that fundamental essence of cooking is all about water, either getting rid of it, putting it back in, changing food in its most basic way. And I think the mushroom is kind of this perfect example of a food that contains so much water, yet also so much flavor. And all we have to do is kind of hit it with some heat, and you can change it dramatically and change it into something really delicious and something really special. Now, yet again, I want to remind you that you should not go out and pick wild mushrooms if you do not know what you are doing, because I cannot be held responsible if you go out and pick some mushroom and eat it and your liver fails and that's the end of you. It's not my responsibility. I didn't tell you to do it. But I have to put that out there just to protect me and the station so nobody sues us if that happens. Anyway, we're just about out of time. I just want to remind you that you are listening to what is now called the Chef Smarty Pants Radio Show. And you can find me on Twitter at Chef Smarty Pants. You'll still have to find us on Facebook at Why We Cook. But I'll figure out a way to change that at some point. And you can still find the show on iTunes, where I believe it's still called Why We Cook, but maybe changing soon. And you can always listen to any of Heritage Radio Network's shows on iTunes. You can podcast them. You can also listen to them on the Heritage Radio Network website, and you can leave us comments, and we love the comments. Keep the comments coming. So that's about it for this week. Thanks to Nat and Jack in the control tower, and we'll see you next week.